Happy summer solstice. If you're in the northern hemisphere, that is likely feeling very warm. And a welcome to however you are experiencing this time of year. It's been a hot minute since we have connected, but I wanted to take today, since our last several episodes have been devoted to mystery school, and just check in on regular life, if there is such a thing, because as we metabolize and sit with the beautiful concepts of mystery school, there is no such thing as just regular life anymore. We see with new eyes and experience all of the images, the movements, the stillness in new and ever new ways. At least that is my experience. The more we spend time with the present moment, the more fascinating and full and rich it becomes, and it colors absolutely everything. So I hope you're doing well. I hope that if you've spent some time with mystery school teachings, that they're making your world fuller, and they're doing their own magical work in their own magical ways, because we all come to our next steps in unique ways. So I hope you're doing well. And I just wanted to talk about sort of where I am in the world and things that have been going on in the last few weeks. I want to do another interview soon. It's been a while since I've done that, and maybe I'll get that done before our end of June session. Maybe not. We'll see. But I will do another one here again soon, because I enjoy that format very much. I just want to touch base with the fact that we're at the very end of the strawberry moon. In fact, the new moon, which will be the thunder moon, will start next Tuesday, the 28th, somewhere in there. And that will be a whole nother phase and cycle again. And I have a few things to share about the waning strawberry moon, which of course is coinciding with the solstice. And I find it so ironic, I always have, that at the height of summer, at the height of the sun, at the beginning of the season of summer, the days start getting shorter again. And don't let that depress you. It just is what it is. It's this constant fullness of light and dark, up and down, the duality that we live in this earth space. You know, that duality is what it is. And orienting our mind to not resist the polarities is really, really fruitful work. And that's sort of, I guess, becoming the theme of this podcast. Sometimes I don't know until I look back and see the themes that are gathering, but I would definitely say that's one of them. You know, and I've seen other folks work out in the world called non-duality, or, you know, living with duality. And you know, I guess that's happening here too, how to live skillfully in that really fertile space, sort of between the polarities of whatever we're experiencing. So the days start to get just a whisper shorter in the northern hemisphere, but there's still much sun and growth and warmth and beach time and gardening and harvest to enjoy. So remember those seeds I planted back several weeks ago when I was prepping mystery school, and I said I'd scattered all those seeds in my backyard because the puppy and all of the puppy's friends had worn some wear and tear through the yard, and it's just grown beautifully. And seeds are so amazing, and I'm watering a little bit. We haven't had a good rain in a few days here in North Carolina. I think we'll get some later in the week. So I was watering my new lawn yesterday. And, you know, it's just such a miracle. I never tire of seeing what bursts forth when the time and the conditions are right. And it's such a beautiful thing just to witness these ever unfolding miracles that are happening internally and externally. I also want to touch on a few stories today that have to do with the solstice, because I love to dip into mythology and legend and just share those ideas, because for me, they're so rich psychically. And I hope you find that too. It's just beautiful to see these stories popping up in children's books or on YouTube videos or in the culture in different ways, or maybe they're part of your cultural heritage, the ones that I will share today. So I want to share a bit of that. And lastly, I want to touch on Top Gun. You know, that may seem like out of left field, but I'm sure if you are in the United States and even abroad, that is a very popular film, the original. When it came out, I think, 36 years ago or something, you know, I was in high school, and that was such a popular film at the time, and certainly made Tom Cruise, you know, everyday household name for sure, and it's been such a long time, and I know that it was being produced during COVID. And I know that Tom Cruise and the production were adamant that, you know, this be released on the big screen. And I just want to say a few things about that. I won't offer any spoilers here if you haven't seen it. And definitely make sure you've seen the first one, because it matters, I think, for the richness of the story and what happens in the second one. But Top Gun Maverick, the sequel, I would argue is better than the first one. I enjoyed it so much. I've seen it more than once. My daughter and I are like these groupies of this film. And we've been to it several times. And it feels really archetypal to me. And I think there's several things going on there. And one is, I think so many people are enjoying it that we're having a shared collective experience right now with that film. And that's really special, because there isn't a lot that's bringing us together right now. And for this, you know, little over 2-hour window of time, I think the collective just relaxes a little bit and smiles and remembers great storytelling and courage and thinking for one's self. These are all beautiful themes, I think you could argue, come very much alive in the story of that film. And it's not political. And it's about redemption, and it's about growing up. And I am just here to say, grown up ass people are the new sexy. I mean, I just love that. I love it when people grow up, because it's just so infinitely more interesting and layered and nuanced and beautiful to see people step into their power, not just their strength. And so it's a beautiful and exciting film to watch. And it has such layers of depth and emotional trajectory and feeling, and it's just fun. The score is gorgeous. So give that a moment of your time if you haven't yet seen it. And I'll add one more thing about Top Gun Maverick, and that is that, you know, when you do inner work, you can't help but see any external images and not make a link. And you know, there's a famous line in the film about not thinking, just doing. And I interpret that as being part of flow, a flow state, in terms of flying and not overanalyzing, that at some point you have to have your skill set, but then you have to release to that state of flow. And that's what we're doing in Mystery School, in all that we explore and touch upon in this podcast, is we're looking at the mind in a new way. We're sort of being mavericks, if you will, of the mind. And maybe we're not flying F-18s or F-14s. And that's fine. You know, that a very rare few do that externally, but we can all do this internally and get a hold of the mind in a new way. And that is so powerful. And that is so exciting. And that is such a discipline that is infinitely fruitful for not only our immediate lives, but our communities and the greater collective. It matters that we're doing this. And so when I see a film like that, it gets me all excited again and renewed again that maybe I'm not a Navy pilot in my day life, but I can take what I find most inspiring about that film and just apply it to the work I've been doing, you know, the discipline I've been doing, and sort of a renewed image and excitement about really having a finely honed skill set that allows me to enter flow state as much as possible, because that's where the magic happens. That's where the miracles happen. So I just wanted to touch on that, because I think in the time since we've visited, that's definitely been in the culture. So allow me to share two poems that I wrote regarding the winding down of the strawberry moon. And one was around the time of the full moon, which of course has passed, but this is what I wrote. Standing in fullness, what if my beloved loves me without condition? What if my creativity has found its true home? What if abundance is my way of life? What if my countenance is growing younger? What if my wisdom is full of humor? What if my gentleness is my greatest strength? What if my calling is now unfolding? What if my children are well and happy? What if my relationships are lightning? What if it's okay to know deep pleasure? What if my greatest challenge is now dissolving? What if the world I now inhabit first sought me? What if I'm enough? What if I'm enough? Such a beautiful thought to contemplate and hold, thinking of the sun at its zenith. The sun is enough. What if I am enough? Just here, just standing, just being. And then I wrote this about the waning moon. And the exhale, the moon slipping away into the comforting darkness. The poignant paradox. Drenched in sun and buzzing with summer activity, the days are now ever so slightly becoming shorter. We may not sense it for a while, perhaps, but beginnings and endings, zenith and ghost, travel together to experience wholeness. The space and theater in which all our human happenings unfold is to know peace. So once again, even though I wrote that several years ago, stillness is evident in that poem. Stillness is present there. And I didn't know that particularly at the time when I wrote it. Which is what I love about stillness, is that it plants those seeds and they come to fruition when they're ready. And, you know, I had an idea of it then, but it was much more intellectual. It was not so much experiential. And I am all about these mental disciplines that we've been embracing, lending to the experience of our divinity, of our joy, of our peace. But it is part of wholeness and of fullness, where we can look at whatever's happening and not judge it, right? The whole theater that is happening before us, it's so easy to get triggered and to get pulled into one of those polarities, but we're not doing that anymore, are we, friend? At least we're catching ourselves when we do it, because that's where the peace is to come back to this still point between the polarities, between and among all the distractions, and just watch them and stay still and stay rooted, stay in that flow state, and then become part of it and listen to its wisdom and listen for what it is actually prompting us to do next, which may be something external or not, maybe just holding that space for a bit longer. So in this beautiful paradox of the zenith of the sun and the days just starting to lean in a bit towards increasing darkness, we're just going to hold all that. We're just going to be with all of that. But I'd like to end today by sharing two beautiful myths and stories about this season and this time. And one is more Celtic in origin, and that is about the Holly King and the Oak King, which I will share with you. And then the other is called Rainbow Crow. And I just came upon this. I was unaware of this story, but it's quite popular, so you may have already heard of it. And that'll be a beautiful way to round out today. So good to check in with you and see how you're doing. And I'll definitely post again before the end of June, which is coming right up. You know, here we go. Blazing through summer already. And that's okay. We can be as still as we can amidst all the activity and busyness. So our first story today, both of these myths can be found in many places, but I happened to find a website called solsticelady.com, and she has gathered a lot of materials and rituals and historical traditions, etc., about solstice, which is pretty cool. So if you want to check out what I am sharing with you today, and her other offerings here regarding solstice, it's a really fun website. So solsticelady.com. And so this first one I want to share, like I said, is Celtic in origin. And it's called The Oak King Slays the Holly King. For the Druids and the Celtic peoples, the forest was the cathedral of the holy. Each tree became known to hold a type of power, to represent a certain constant, to have influence over certain areas. Seasonally, certain trees gained prominence while others faded away until their time returned. The oak tree, significant for its towering height and its magnificent strength, became the symbol of long life and wisdom, a tree of kings. The stretching of its mighty branches over the lesser trees of the forest was seen as protective. The oak was considered to represent the season of growth. Alongside the Earth Mother, the Oak King ruled the land as crops and flowers and livestock flourished under the summer sun. The Oak King and the Holly King are brothers. They are twins, and it is not an uncommon theme in myth that twins cannot both flourish at once. As in the case of the Oak and Holly Kings, only one can be in his prime at a time. Each represents the missing half of the other. They are one, but not the same. They are light and mystery, one reaching up and one in decline. At midsummer, the summer solstice, the brightest moment of the year, the Oak king is slain by the Holy King, the Dark King representing the decline of the sun and the return of the world into dormancy and darkness. From that day onward, the year is dying. The evergreen nature of the holly is particularly significant in the winter months. When the leaves drop from the great oak and strip it barren to the icy winds, the holly is still fully cloaked in its coat of sharp and thorny green leaves. Thus, the holly tree represents immortality and victory beyond death, beyond the darkness. But in the form of the Holly King, it also represents the dying side of the year. At winter solstice, the Oak King rises once again from slumber and slays the Holly King. Now, with the Oak King once more in reign, there will be the guarantee of the fertility of the growing year, the promise of days getting longer and longer, and the knowledge that the forests will once more flourish and be filled with the rustling of the leaves of the trees. Incidentally, the companion bird of the Oak King is the robin, which is why the sight of the first robin of spring is significant. It means the Oak King is returning to prominence. I think that's just such a lovely touch of linking us to nature and the Celtic tradition, which is always spoken to me. And indeed, I have ancestry in the Celtic part of the world. So that's cool. And so now we will shift to a different region and tradition. And this story is from the Lenape people. They're also sometimes referred to as the Delaware people. And this story is called Rainbow Crow Brings Fire, again from the Lenape tradition. In a time before humanity, there came the first winter. The water hardened to ice so that none could drink from the streams. Snow fell without any sign of stopping. Fun as it was on that first day to frolic in this new weather, far too soon the animals realized the cold threatened their very lives. The snow was so deep upon the land that the largest animals could hardly push their way through. The smallest of the animals were lost in the deep, cold drifts. The animals gathered, deciding they must send a message to the Creator, who creates by thinking what will be. The animals knew it was time to implore Kiajemukeong to request that he should drive off spirit snow by thinking the world warm again. After much deliberation over who would be their messenger, it was decided that the honor would go to Crow, for he was the most beautiful of the birds, with feathers that shimmered with all the colors of the rainbow, and he had a magnificent singing voice that brought tears to the eyes of the other birds. And so Crow flew, with his brilliant feathers and magnificent singing voice, for 3 days. He left behind the tallest of the trees, passed through the clouds, flying past the sun and the moon. There was no perch for him to take rest, so he flew onward until he reached the holy place where the Creator lived. Once he regained his breath, he called out bravely for the Creator to hear his entreaty. No one came. The crow started to sing his beautiful song. Soon, the Creator's focus was drawn from his thinking by the lovely bird song, so he went to find out which of the birds had such a magnificent voice. So moved was he that when he found the rainbow crow, he offered to think the bird a gift in exchange for the pleasant sounds. The crow delivered the request from the animals who were buried in and struggling through the snow. "Please, Creator, unthink the snow so that we will no longer freeze." The Creator shook his head sadly, telling the crow that he could not control the winter forces of snow, frost, and ice, for they had their own spirits. Yet the Creator did not want all the animals to perish, so he took up a great stick and thrust it into the fiery sun. He offered the stick to the Rainbow Crow. On the end of the stick there was a glowing orange brilliance which gave off both heat and light. I am giving you tender fire. It will drive back the cold and darkness, but in order for it to live, it must burn. He handed the unlit end to the Rainbow Crow, urging him to fly swiftly to the earth before the branch was fully consumed. The light of the flames lit the journey home, even as the heat kept Crow warm while he flew along the paths of stars that was the Milky Way. As he was passing the sun, his resplendent tail feathers were darkened to black. By the time he reached the moon, the soot had blackened his entire body. The stick was burning so close to his face as he reached the sky that every breath scorched his throat. When he arrived upon the earth with the gift of the Creator, he was black as coal, and his beautiful voice was nothing but a harsh caw. The Creator saw the animals rejoicing below, dancing around their fires, celebrating the heat and light. But Crow sat apart, grieving his diminished glory. "Do not despair, friend Crow." The Creator went to him as a gentle wind, then stood before him. "You will be unique of all the birds. Your flesh has breathed the smoke, so humans will not find you good to eat. You will not be hunted. Your voice has tasted the heat, so humans will not find your song pleasing anymore. You will not be trapped in cages to sing for them. Of all the birds, Crow shall be most free." The Creator gave Crow a final gift. His grace brushed across the soot-blackened bird, leaving behind the sheen of a rainbow on each feather. When the people see the rainbow in every one of your feathers, they will know that you have made a great sacrifice. Everyone will remember what it has cost you to do this service for your people. Those who remember honor the crow to this day. I can't tell you how much I love this Lenape tradition story. I'm so grateful for it. And again, I can't help but find so many similarities with what we've been exploring together for the past several weeks. You know, when we take those deep dives inside and go through the dark and embrace that wholeness, that other half of experience that isn't necessarily pleasant in any way, we are transformed and we are changed. But that's not the last word. And I love that this gravitas of the crow coming out the other side of his sacrifice. You know, we have this beautiful presence and this freedom with still the shimmer of the rainbow. And so as we conclude today, I just encourage you to keep on in your faith. I'm not making any sort of religious statement in that regard, but I'm learning the distinction between hope and faith. And I tend to be a hopeful and optimistic person, but I'm finding that faith means I am touching that within me, which is eternal, and I'm resting in the grace and the power of that. And so a faithful walk for me is not an outwardly religious one in my instance, but just invoking that stillness and that mystery and trusting it, leaning more into it in all ways with each breath. And I'm finding that that is more nourishing to me. So play with that a bit and see if maybe just the mental positions of hope and optimism feel less sure, perhaps, than resting and surrendering into this faith of the still point. Because we sense it. We know it's real, don't we? We know it's there. and we've experienced the power that it shares with us when we need it most. And so call it whatever you want, whatever is most familiar or comfortable for you in terms of your own traditions and belief system. But we know it's there. And I like exchanging, I guess, this sort of mental hope and optimism now for just this deep faith in what I know is actually sustainable for me and for you. So with that, have a beautiful week. Enjoy the sun. Enjoy the warmth. If you're in the Southern Hemisphere, enjoy whatever is happening there. And we will connect again before the end of the month. And until next time, take good care. Hi, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if my work is nourishing your heart and imagination, consider supporting the Apothecary Podcast. Just follow the links to make a contribution. And for the full scope of my projects and offerings, including my weekly newsletter, visit lorigreen.net.